Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, my name is VexX, joined along with our co-host, Mr. Vincent Grassi. How are you, sir?
Excellent.
So it, you, go ahead.
It is Gracie, by the way.
Is it Gracie?
But it's okay.
Man. Well, come on, let's slide. Let's
making
slide.
Me feel all awkward on the podcast.
Hey, I feel awkward every day. It's all good.
I fuck up names constantly. Like when you're in the, like you play, right? Yeah. You're in a band. I'm in a band. You're in a band called?
Ascension Drive.
There you go. So when Ascension Drive plays shows, sorry to cut you off.
You're in a band called?
Yeah, it doesn't matter. So I'm in a band called Star Scream. I have a feeling if they've listened to the Vex on Vex podcast, they might have heard of Star Scream before. Maybe. We've only been around 120 years. But the point being, you get off stage and you meet people. And I faces I'm really, really good at. I can meet you in 1992 and I can see you in 2015 and I'll know. I know your face. I just don't know your name. I'm not good at the names. And then I try to work on it. Like when you're in a situation, yeah. Like in the club, they're like, oh, this is John. And you're like, John, his name's John. His name. And while they're talking, you're not really hearing what he's saying. Name's John. Oh, and I work in. Oh, John, it's nice to meet you. Okay. But I don't know, man. Names aren't my thing.
Yeah.
What's your Achilles heel?
Sometimes names too.
Socially.
Socially, well, interacting with people on a regular basis.
Really?
It's so weird for me, and I can be very introverted at times.
Well, you know, the best guitar players are, to be sincere with you, mm-hmm. So that I hear you.
But some people, and my girlfriend's like, I can't believe you're an introvert. There's no way you're an introvert.
Why?
You're always so outgoing. You're always talking to people, and I tell people all the time, it's an act. It's a constant act.
You see, you're admitting. You know, there's 10,000 listeners on the Vex and Vex podcast.
It's like I can be very friendly.
Okay,
I try to engage myself more, but sometimes it's like I can find myself in situations where like I'm just gonna stay quiet and stay out of here.
I am gonna hijack this story, and yeah. It's gonna be long winded. And I apologize in advance, my friend.
It's all right,
Vince. I have a story for you.
Hit me with it.
When I was a young Vex, I was a teenager, right? I'm thinking.
Well, you talk like this all the time. I remember that.
Yo, what's up?
Won't fit in my door.
There you go. 91, I'm going to say.
Yeah.
Maybe not. Maybe 90. Was I a freshman? I guess I was a freshman in high school, so maybe it's 90. There was a thing called the Snowball Dance, which
yes.
was at Nazareth Academy, which was a very expensive all-girls Catholic high school. Mm-hmm. And I went to an all-boys Catholic high school, not as expensive, but it wasn't free. And somebody from the neighborhood invited me to go as her date. But we weren't really together. Mm-hmm. We just went together. And I remember after the dance, we went to a diner or some shit, which I'd never really done. I was like 14, mm-hmm. and it was like social. And there's girls that you've never seen before, and they're all dressed up. And you remember how horny you are at 14? Like the wind blows, your dick's hard. It's like that. I remember working the room for the first time ever, and I left with 4 phone numbers that night. And it was my eyes were open. Like you said, you're introverted.
Yeah.
I learned that night that I am not. I am an extrovert motherfucker. Like, hello, how are you? Woo! And I remember like, okay, I'm not an adult because I was a kid, but this is what being an adult's going to be like. And I'm going to be able to work a room and be a front man and rock and roll. Because I swear to God, when I was a little kid, and this is another fucking way back story. Remember when you're in 5th grade and you're like, what do you want to do when you grow up, Vince?
Yeah.
I never had an answer.
I
wanted to be a cop, I think, when I was like 5, and maybe a priest, because I remember the first person I ever seen perform and wear cool fucking clothing, I guess, was a priest when you're like 5, 6 years old. For real, because I'm a Catholic. You're a Catholic, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm like, yeah, I could do this, you know, talk to the people, get up on fucking stage and run shit. But then you discover rock and roll, and you're like, no, I had this all wrong. The priest thing's cool, but no. So in my mind, I'm like, I don't know what I'm going to do, but if anything gets fucked up, I'm just going to grow up and be a rock star. I think I can be a rock star. I decided this at like 7, like, and I didn't even know anything.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm still chasing this fucking path, but, you know, many years later. That's my story.
That's
but
awesome.
Anyway, I knew I could work a room about 13 years old, maybe 14 years old. I just knew I could work a room. But you say you feel introverted.
I feel, and I don't know what it is. It's just sometimes I get really shy when I'm in unfamiliar situations. When I'm around my friends, though,
yeah.
They always say I'm going to do this and shut up.
Really?
But for me, it's like.
Well, can I ask you a personal question?
Yes, go ahead.
When you came down for your first podcast with us, which was at Studio A, which is Robot's house,
yeah.
in Delaware, not far from where you live,
mm-hmm.
did you feel awkward?
At first, because no one was, only Robot's wife was home.
Because we were out.
When
yeah.
I
think we were getting
so dinner. I was just like, I felt a little, not uncomfortable,
okay.
but unease. But second she walked me into the house, I felt comfortable.
Okay, and then you know you left your keys in the car that night.
I did. I remember that.
Which was fucking
my rental at the time.
Nice car.
It was.
It
I miss
it.
That was a cool car. But
so my question was, when you sat down to talk to us, like, did you feel the awkwardness?
I at first, but as the more we talked,
yeah.
the more things went, I started feeling better. I felt relaxed because it was like, once we got into the flow of the conversation and everything, I was like, oh, this is easy.
And like you on the last episode, which was episode 20, this is episode 21, by the way, you said that we had some beef and that you felt awkward about it.
We did.
We played a show together. You came out, you played, and then you left because you had a long ride home and you had to work the next morning.
Yeah.
And I felt like, boy, it's like, you can't watch my set. Because I figured it's only like 40 more minutes of your life. And you're like, no, man, I got to get up. And I was like, motherfucker.
And I was just like, oh, shit. Like, yeah. I was freaking out, having panic attacks on the drive home.
Why?
I don't know why. It was just like,
bro, I didn't threaten you. You didn't. Like,
no, literally, he is one of the nicest dudes you ever meet. Aww. But if you tick him off,
that's true.
He will never forget.
That's the thing, right? That's my warning.
Your memory is long.
I'm not gonna hurt yourself. Anyone, but I'm gonna remember
exactly. And it was just like, you know, I just like a few like hour or so before, I mentioned my other band. I was like, please help us. And then I was like, now I'm ruin that chance.
I did say that.
That's all my mind was
I was like,
going.
I'm not booking that fucking band.
I was like, all my mind was going on. I was just like,
why didn't you stay?
I did want to. I was his ride, and
it wasn't you driving?
I was driving. I was his driver. I was his ride.
His who?
Our drummer at the time.
At the time, okay.
At the time, okay. And I had basically my thought is I had to get up at 5:30 in the morning every day.
And it was already like 1 or midnight.
It was,
or something,
no,
right?
And it was like, I was exhausted. And
when you worked at Amazon, how many days a week was it?
4 days a week.
That's not that bad.
At the time, I was working weekends, so I worked Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday.
Holy
shit. That was
shit.
My shift, yeah.
And then you were playing fucking shows on top of that.
Yeah, exactly. So it was a little farther from me. Mm-hmm. I had to take him home. We had to unload his car then so I can get home.
And you still got to be up at 5:30. Because if you're late to Amazon, it's a fucking problem.
Yeah,
right?
It is.
Now, it's weird. We discuss this off microphone. But I've had Philly Restorations, which is my company.
Yeah.
I think approaching 7 years. And after our first year, that winter came, and what I did, we weren't busy. And I hadn't saved enough money in the summer, and I was like desperate. I was like, man, I gotta get a job, you know? And I had gotten a phone call when we were talking off mic, and it was Integrity Staffing, because they have my number.
Yeah.
Integrity Staffing, I went and applied for Amazon. Now check this out, this is years ago, because this is like, you know, a while. They say literally, you need your high school diploma to work here. Do you remember hearing that? I don't even know where the fuck that is. I'm in my 40s, Vince. Like, I was like, what? Wait, what?
Where is
now,
that?
Now, I don't know if anybody knows this. My name's legally changed. My first name is Vex. I wasn't born Vex. We went to Europe in 2002, and the passport I had my name, my surname. But my working permit said Vex, because it was an entertainment working permit. That's my stage name. And when you get to other like borders and countries, that doesn't fly. This isn't fucking you. And I'm like, it's me. So the attorney at the time was like, hey, just change your fucking name. If you're going to tour, change your fucking name. So I changed it to Vex legally. You know what I mean? My if I even found my diploma, it's not going to say Vex on it. And I remember thinking, how do I explain this to my prospective employer? So I didn't take the job at Amazon. I worked for another roofing company to get me through the winter a little bit. And then by the spring when the weather broke, my company took off again. And I haven't had to worry about working for someone else since. Mm-hmm. But about 6 years ago or 7 years ago, that happened. So the working weekends for Amazon was looming in my life.
It was.
And then I'm a football fan. I don't know if you're a football fan.
I'm from – actually, we're going to probably get into a big debate here because I know you're a Philly native.
I grew up
in Pittsburgh, PA.
Yeah.
I grew up so
– but you like the Steelers.
I like the Steelers.
Why would I be mad about that? You're not a fucking Cowboys fan.
I'm not a Cowboys fan.
But do you see my Eagles poster right there that says at last?
Yeah.
Because we won the fucking Super Bowl, goddammit. Finally.
And so growing up, I was Pittsburgh sports.
But no, but I'm Pennsylvania.
All PA, all Pittsburgh teams for me.
Okay.
And all across the board. Baseball's interesting.
Yeah.
I'm a Pirates fan, but my father growing up, and it's funny, he grew up in Lebanon, PA.
Okay.
So his dad, Big Vince, was a Yankees/Phillies fan.
Man, I'm not a baseball guy, but I admire the Yankees a lot.
I grew up a Yankee fan. I love the Yankees.
Like, so do I. Like, I'm not modern Yankees so much.
This team's good, though.
No, now. But when is it A-Rod?
A-Rod that era, yeah.
Like
Derek Jeter was the big guy, though.
But Jeter, you like Jeter.
I love Derek Jeter.
But A-Rod was kind of a jerk-off. And didn't he steal money for a year? Like, he had that year with the PEDs, then he backed down. Dude, and now he's on Shark Tank, right?
Yeah.
And he's richer than God, and he's a millionaire. He's an asshole.
Yeah.
Like, little kids shouldn't look up to this fucking guy. They should look up to Jeter. Yeah. Jeter was the fucking guy.
Jeter is the guy.
And that
still is
the guy. A-Rod has all the press and all the shit. Actually, going off on sports, I'm a football fan.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a full sports fan per se. Like, I'm not a basketball guy. Are you a basketball guy?
I'm not.
Do you know anything about Kobe Bryant?
I do know a few about Kobe Bryant.
And he's from Italy, And then he grows up the Pennsylvania area, and then he goes and he's a Laker. And then we face them in 2001, and they crush us because we fucking had Allen Iverson broken up and dying, which sucked, frankly. The point is, Kobe's trying to exist without basketball. And Shaq, who is his teammate, is everywhere. Shaq is worth $300 million.
Shaq's so marketable.
And Kobe's a fucker. And if you're a fucker your entire career, and you're arrogant your entire career, and now you're arrogant just who you are.
Yeah.
He's a fucker. Nobody likes him. I don't like Kobe Bryant. Like, I understand when he played, he was great. The last three seasons that he was in the Lakers, he just stole money.
Yeah.
Like, he sucked. And he was demanding $30 million a year to do shit.
You're not worth that much.
Brought a lot of championships there. He's no Magic Johnson. Magic Johnson fucking gets diagnosed with HIV. And at the height of his fucking success, retires. Mm-hmm. You understand? That's what a respectful man does. Yeah. You don't stay like, I know I suck. Give me my $30 million. Like, that kills me. I think he's a flawed person. He got caught kind of sexually attacking a woman, if you will, years ago. I don't know, man. I don't like fucking the Black Mamba. But then there's a guy who works for us. That's his nickname, which I think is funny. Did you ever see Kill Bill, those movies?
I've only seen bits and pieces of them.
They're on cable this month, right? So I'm watching them. Because, again, bits and pieces. Like, I'm not a fan per se. But there's a scene where remember the movie Splash from 1,000 years ago? You don't even remember. You're so young. I forget her fucking name. She's a hot blonde in the 80s. She's in this movie. And she's got the eye patch, and she's an assassin. Do you have any idea what I'm talking about?
Think so.
She kills somebody with a Black Mamba in the movie. Wow. And then she reads off the list while he's dying. She's like, there's a gargantuan amount of venom in one bite. And she's like, it's so rare I get to use the word gargantuan in a sentence. Like, really cool fucking dialogue from fucking
Tarantino.
Yeah, Tarantino.
Tarantino's great.
But the Black Mamba, which is a guy who works for us. He calls himself that. He's a boxer. We love him. So that's if awesome. You're – not that you'll ever hear this, but Jeff, if you're listening, we love you dearly. Now that we've done literally 12 minutes of bullshit.
Yeah. Let's talk about the real deal.
The real deal. So you're in a band.
Ascension Drive.
Now you're making a record.
We are making a single right now. Doing so three songs.
In 2018, right?
Yeah.
EPs are really popular now.
Yeah.
And singles are really popular now. I'm old, right? So we're making an album.
You guys are.
So let's talk about your situation first.
So with us, it's more like it's financially is a big thing.
I hear you.
We're making some, got some pretty big pay from these past few shows we did, which is great. But we don't have enough. Studios are expensive, as you know.
Yeah,
they can be really expensive, and we just don't have
the financial
resources and the finances. Even individually, it's hard to pull that together. So our guitar player, Chris, had a studio you want to check out called Lumberyard in Jersey, which is had some guys from a band called Man Overboard, I believe.
Okay.
Like, these bands, like, a few decades ago, like, toured, like, World Tour and stuff like that.
Okay.
Like, big in the punk scene there in Jersey.
I don't think punk's the fucking guys you want making your record, but go ahead, sir.
But I think the thing is, these guys have been in bands that toured.
Okay.
They had a studio that sounded, when I heard the samples, sounded really good.
Okay.
And it's all about connection, getting your name out there. And so if these dudes like us.
Yeah.
And if they like what they hear, they could, for all we know, they could send it out somewhere.
I got to be honest. I don't agree. I'm old. They are running a studio.
Mm-hmm.
They will take anything. They don't, like, then they just do pay them and they'll record you. So they don't really give a fuck, you know what I'm saying? What I found, in my humble opinion, doesn't mean I'm right, Vince, for real. So follow what you're doing.
Yeah.
You have maybe you'll get signed next year and that'll be great for you. I just, you want the best guy who can work his board and make you sound the best. That's what it's about for me. Like, fuck connections. I did that. We paid an obscene amount of money for the gentleman who mastered Appetite for Destruction to master our Mike second Link. Record. No, that's the producer. That's not the masterer. It's in Sterling Sound in New York City. I forget his name. If you say it, I'll know it. I just don't remember who he is. I think he passed away. The point is, he mastered our second record. It cost us an obscene amount of money. I think he spent 45 minutes on it.
Serious?
Yeah, and then kicked us out. And so his name was on the record, but he didn't master it better than somebody that could have done it locally for a fraction of the price. And I learned that. I was like, because I was hoping he's going to like it, and he'll send it along to Sony. He didn't send a shit. And then we sent it to Roadrunner because we had a connection to Roadrunner. And literally, the drummer from a band called Heaven's Edge, you don't know who that is, but they were huge in Philly, and they were an MTV band back in the hair day. They were like one of the last hair bands.
Yeah.
He ran Roadrunner. He used to be the guy for Nickelback. And then he made Roadrunner heavy. Remember when Soil was on Roadrunner and all these really like brutal bands? Because he's a drummer. He's like, your shit's too dated, so we don't care. And that record sounded so good, and he didn't care. So it isn't, I don't know, who you know never fucking helped us in that capacity to get us the big money. So just, in my opinion, you get the best guy to make your band sound the best. Now, Starscream as a project sorry to hijack this yet again.
No, go ahead.
Never could capture the power and fury live on a record, and that took a while.
You are powerful live.
Why, thank you.
You guys are so tight live.
Well, we've known a long time. Yeah. Thank you. And to get that power on the CD, it's fucking rough, man. Then the new guy we're doing, I think it's been pretty good. Like, we have 11 songs. Drums, bass, and rhythm guitar are done for 11 of the songs. Eight of the songs, the vocals are done.
Mm-hmm.
I got to sing three more. None of the solos are done. And then there's like clean guitar effects and layering. None of that's done either. So we're looking at like a couple more weeks. But once the recording process is finished, then you got to mix, then you got to master, and then you got to fucking produce. We're going to make vinyls this time, which we haven't done ever.
Nice.
Yeah, like when you go into my office, there's a Guns N' Roses vinyl hanging in a frame. Mm-hmm. I want a fucking Starscream vinyl on my wall.
There you go.
Just to have one, you know? And
for us, we're doing one song with these guys right now just to make sure they're...
Sounds good, yeah.
What we're going to do is we're going to re-record a song off the EP called A View from the Top, which arguably is one of our more popular songs. Okay. Everyone seems to love that.
Okay.
Which is really cool
for
me, because that was one of my songs I brought to the table. I wrote every song off that EP, so what am
so
I saying?
So modest.
But most importantly, we want a song with Chris.
Okay.
Because with Chris, he adds so much more to our sound.
I got
to
tell you, it's refreshing that you're the guitar player and you're so, like, you're open to Chris being your guy.
I mean, he's amazing. And for me, it was like, we were skeptical at first because I've worked in a band with two guitar players before. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. And I wanted to make sure if he's that guy, he can gel well with the rest of us. And he does.
Okay.
He makes the song sound so much better. There's much more fuller, much more, adds different elements to it, different layers that I would never think of before.
Okay.
And it becomes like a completely different song.
Really?
I think we were good. We were really good before him. I feel we're better.
That's what
I feel like
be.
We evolved.
A band member should bring it to the band, like, you know, increasing.
He was hungry for it. He wanted it. And when he turned 21, we decided on his birthday that make him an official member.
Oh, wow. That's heavy. So he wasn't.
He wasn't official. He only
played. Wait, it was like if you go to see the Goo Goo Dolls and they have that rhythm guitar player. Yeah. You had it like that, you rock star motherfuckers.
Yeah. Funny mention. I actually love that band. Funny you mention that.
You know, he annoys me.
Resnick?
Yeah.
I love Resnick.
Weird face happening. Got some face work. I'm not a big fan.
I wish I wrote Iris. I'm just throwing that straight out there.
I wish I wrote Yesterday by fucking, you know, Paul McCartney.
That too.
That's what
I wish
I
wrote
Iris
too.
Fucking
but
Iris.
I think that guy, great songwriter.
The Goos.
But anyway, though. That's another topic. That's one of my guilty pleasure acts.
That's not a guilty pleasure. They're a good band. It's just not my thing.
Oh, I feel it.
Then, like, all right, do you know about that band?
Yeah. They were a punk band way before.
Well, no, I have a question. I want to learn something. They had a drummer come in and pick them up right at the height of their, like, popularity, like a guy off the street. And he was in the band for, like, a decade.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's not anymore.
Yeah.
What the fuck happened?
I don't know what's going on there.
I'd like to know.
I would like to know, too, because he was iconic for that.
And he was, like, a good dude.
He was.
And he could – maybe it's drugs. I don't know what it is. But I hope he didn't ask for more money and they were like, fuck you, no. Because it is those two guys.
Yeah, Robbie and John Resnick.
And that bass player is atrocious, in my opinion. I don't think he's a good bass player at all. I hate his fucking bass he plays. I hate how he looks. No, for real. Little fat guy? Come on. Get it. Like, he looks like Nikki Six is fucking bloated. That's what the fuck he looks like. Same hair. Same. Come on. You're in a fucking band, man. Well, I don't know, man. No. Fuck. What are they called? The Mary Chain? Anyway, I've sucked off on that tangent. I don't like how that bass player looks. Fuck that guy.
Anyway. But no, it's so funny because he came to our first Voltage Lounge show we ever did, and our first Truck show. And in fact, we have a video of us live at the Truck. You can see Chris in the audience.
Yeah, you told me that.
I mentioned that, which I always thought was funny. And like I mentioned before, he was Marcus's girlfriend's brother.
Yeah.
We knew him as a guitar maker. We found out he was learning our songs. He approached Marcus. I later, after we did the first podcast, I asked Marcus to clarify the story.
Sure.
I was like, did I get this wrong?
Yeah.
And he goes, Chris approached him. So he was like wanting to jam with us or something. He was inspired to play.
I was astounded at how powerful you are live the first time I saw you. Like, I was, no, for real, because I was mad at you.
Yeah,
and I was
that.
Like, fuck this guy. And then you got up and I was like, I can't deny it. It's really, really good. Like, the band's powerful, man. It's a good band. I'm so glad we're friends. And
I'm so glad. We walked up to each other afterwards, and you said all this. And the first thing I said was, "I'm so sorry for doing that one thing so many years ago."
Oh, whatever.
That was the first
thing
I said.
Dude, I'll tell you, the cream rises, and the band's good. The songs are good. Just the whole thing, like, it's powerful. And I was shocked. Mm-hmm. I'm not gonna lie to you, because the project you were working with when I met you, we're not gonna say, mm-hmm. but it wasn't that powerful. It wasn't like that. And I kind of thought that's what it would sound like, kind of like basic and stuff. And no, it keeps fucking
we sharp, man. Kick each other's asses all the time when we write.
How many days a week do you guys practice?
2 days a week. We try to do 2 days a week with everyone's schedules. It's a little...
It's weird, right?
It's weird. Like, not to say, but some guys sometimes don't make it.
That sucks. A week.
But as long as at least the musicians are there, we can work the room. We can craft more stuff together. And when our singer can hear it,
yes,
he'll start working on that individually. And when he brings the final product to us, we'll listen to it. We'll check lyrics. I remember there are times we're so critical on each other sometimes.
Really?
I remember one of our earliest songs we did was a song called Truth. It was the first song we wrote together as a new band. And he sent me the chorus lyrics for that.
Okay.
And I pretty much said, dude, this sucks. Like, I've heard you've written better. I know you can write better.
That's mean.
And I felt bad, but I wasn't feeling it. I wasn't going to lie. Because, you know, that's if I didn't like it, if one guy wasn't going to like it.
I remember being younger,
yeah,
like a kid, when I was in my teens, and we were in a band. I don't think anybody ever questioned my lyrics, mm-hmm, ever, because, you know, you don't make that record when you're a kid. And then we went in the studio, and nobody ever asked me. The lyrics were in the tape, because it was a cassette tape.
Yeah.
And then we got a real producer in the late 90s.
Mm-hmm.
He has, like, a Grammy nomination. He's on a Patti LaBelle record. He's in Philly. I'd be honest. If I'm completely honest, I don't really like him. For my band and for my project, he was like college,
mm-hmm,
of music. So we went there, our pocket was loose. He taught us how to fucking stay in the pocket and use the click track and just how to write and rewrite and all that shit. And he was the first person to ever question my lyrics. And it upset me. Mm-hmm. I was like, what the fuck's that line mean? And I was a kid. I was young. Yeah. And I was like, so I defended the line. I had to rewrite it. I rewrote it. I'll tell you this, he never questioned my lyrics again, because from that one fucking time I was questioned, I would fucking agonize over them. So when I came in, they were potent.
And that's what happened. Then he sent me another text. He was annoyed. But then he said, you know what? I slept on it.
Yeah.
You're right. Let me try it again. Second draft is the final draft.
Like, we just, so we're making the record too,
yeah,
right? It's the record's called Weapons.
I like that.
Thank you. The title track's called Weapons. And, we added three new songs from scratch that no one's even heard that are going to be on this record. We can't play them live yet because they're not really tight, but they're on the record. So we go in last Sunday. We're cutting the basic tracks for that. But I had to get the lyrics done. On the off chance, there's enough time on the clock and I can start singing the lyrics. Mm-hmm. You understand what I'm saying? I agonized, man. I remember texting my drummer like lyrics. He goes, these are great. And I'm like, no. And then I'd rewrite them again. And he's like, oh, these are. So he also liked the new version, but I just kept honing it and honing it and honing it. And it's because somebody fucked with me, just like you did with your guy. Like,
yeah.
I don't know, man. It's interesting.
It is. It's because we only try to push ourselves, and like we are not afraid to get a little, not necessarily mean with each other, but get a little in your face. Like, there's been times I butt heads with one of our band members before. Like, he was.
What happened?
I kept screwing up a riff. I remember a song that later became a song called Asylum.
Okay.
And I couldn't remember how the exact rhythm of it, and he made a comment going, well, maybe if you shut the F up for like 5 seconds and actually play it. I looked at him and I was just like, I know you're not talking like that, dude. You can sit the fuck back down.
Oh.
And then he got all puffy and I was like, go ahead, have your hissy fit.
Oh.
Like, go ahead. And we cleaned it up after that. But that stuff like that, we're really not afraid.
I am writing a chapter in my book,
mm-hmm,
just about the hissy fits of musicians. I used to say in my 20s as a kid that musicians are catty as fuck.
Yes.
Now, here's where it gets weird. We have all this testosterone because we're men, mm-hmm, right? Hair on our faces and fucking rah, right? But goddamn, do our feelings get hurt. Like, oh my God, did you say that about me? Oh my God. And then you want to fight them and they want to fight you. Man, musicians are fucking catty. Now, in Starscream, we've gotten past it. Uh-huh. We still have our moments. Like I said, I got into like a discussion yesterday with our drummer before the show. And that sucked. But we fixed it. Yeah. I love Joey, by
Joey's
the way.
Awesome.
He's never been on the fucking podcast, by the way.
Really?
Which he's annoyed about, because like when we first established it, he's like, I want to be on. And I'm like, yeah. And then it just kind of
bring
never,
him in.
I hear you, but you got to fucking line it up and it's got to happen and blah, blah, blah. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Exactly.
And then I don't know about you, but when Starscream isn't working as Starscream, we don't fucking see each other anymore because we spend so much time together writing and recording and fucking all that shit. Rehearsing, playing. When we're not playing, we're having different lives. Like, we're at that point. You know what I mean?
It can be, but like my lead singer Jack,
He's like one of my best friends. So okay. And because he works a lot, I'm always like, dude, like, just come chill.
And what's so he
do? He works at a restaurant. Works in Fridays. He's a manager.
He's not a waiter. He's a manager.
He's a manager.
That's a rough one, dude.
It is. But he's always so busy. But he he's working there a while. He makes good money. But
oh yeah, of course he does. But it's a good industry.
He's just busy all the time.
Does he have any kids or anything?
No,
that's good. That's really
none. None of us have kids.
Yeah, we can't say that in Starscream because a lot of kids.
Nothing.
None of mine. By
nothing wrong with that.
Ah, you get older, it just happens. Like it's weird. The first band house for Starscream, which I still own, is this little shitty house in Port Richmond. I love the house. I lived there a long time. I bought it so we could have a place to rehearse and keep the gear, and it was like fucking ground zero for all of us. And then I paid it off, so there's no mortgage, which is a nice feeling.
Nice.
You know what I mean? And now I have this fucking thing. It's like, oh, another giant mortgage. But it's cool. It's a nice house, and it's big, and yeah, I enjoy it. Nice. Thank you. But the point is, you get older, the houses get bigger, the mortgages get bigger. Now there's kids in the mix. Like, we can't tour like we used to do because there's families and shit. Like, it isn't like it was. We just like, all right, let's fucking go. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And now it's like, you have to coordinate.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, I want to do the big tour, too. I think all of us are.
We've never done a big tour, but we've done the tour. Like, the big tour, like, okay, there was a band called Sloth in Philadelphia many years ago.
Okay.
We were in tandem with them. I dated the singer's sister for a while. She was awesome. She dumped me because I'm crazy. Can't blame her. Wrote a song about it. It was awesome.
Was that song Lisa?
No. That was a girl. No, it was the girl. Lisa's the girl after her, actually.
Aww. I love that song.
That's one
of my favorite songs.
Thank you. I really liked that girl a lot, and she was really awesome. It just didn't work out. But no bad breakup. Like, yeah. It just didn't work out. So me and the Lisa girl break up. But the point is, the band Sloth, they're playing a place called the Grape Street, which I'm sure you heard of, in Manayunk. And a band that no one's ever heard of yet comes through town. They're signed to Wind Up Records.
Wow.
So Seether has a deal. They're not famous. They come through Philly. They're just the guitar player, the bass player, and the drummer. The guitar player and the bass player from South Africa, mm-hmm. They hire a drummer in LA. Now they're on the East Coast. The record's going to come out soonish, but there's no fucking whatever. So Sloth opens. The lead guitar player in Sloth's a really good guy.
Yeah.
A fine guitar player. His name's Pat. Seether hired him, and he was in Seether for years.
Oh, wow.
And he left. He just left. Like, he was the guy. So he had the big tour, the tour bus, the big venues. They made a live record at the new Grape Street Pub, which was the place they found him. The cold hard winter or a long cold winter or something. It's him. And then he had like falling out with the singer and he left the project and he's never gotten back. You understand? But he had a moment, 2 years, 3 years where he was on the big fucking swing of things. So somebody we knew made it to the big thing. Now we've toured extensively in our little bus, coast to coast, and you sleep in hotel rooms.
Of course.
You have sex with random women. That part's fun. And it's a good run, and it's exciting, but we never got to the big tour. And then we got to Europe. Man, listen to this. We go to our first European tour, and we rented the biggest van you could get in England, which is about the size of a microphone.
Are you serious?
You don't know that.
Wow.
We're on the phone. We're like, we're your biggest van. They're like, no problem, mate. We come over, and it's like a fucking compact car.
Wow.
That's the biggest thing you can get. So the gear just about fit. We're all taking the tube, which is the train, to the fucking gigs, and the gear's going ahead of us. It was weird, man. It was a weird time.
That's insane.
Yeah, but it happened. You get through it. We never made the big tour, though.
Wow. That's just the dream. Nah, like, we're all in it for that.
You gotta tell you, when you get there, make the money and keep the money because you're going to get an advance from the label, and a lot of people spend that advance. And then they might not recoup and ever get more money. So if you get $100,000, keep the $100,000, dude. Like, for real. Try to do that. So go ahead. What's up with when you're recording this track, did you start already?
We're starting in July.
Why so long?
The studio, it was just they had an open spot in July.
Now, is it a lot to do the track?
Per song it was like $800 a song.
You're lying to me.
I'm not lying.
We could have got you a great studio for way cheaper than that.
Wow.
We're doing a place where you buy blocks, like it's called Hopetown Studios.
Okay.
Did you see any of the videos on Facebook or hear any
of it? Yeah, I did.
It sounds fucking good, man. Yes. And I don't want to say numbers over here and like quote it, but it's much cheaper. Like you can get like an entire day for half of what you're paying for that song. And
that's
in an
insane.
Entire day, you can knock a lot of fucking shit out, dude.
What the?
Like a lot of shit out.
To check you out.
That's what we did. We did the Sunday for like half of that.
Mm-hmm.
And we built the first day, we built from the ground up 8 songs. We did 8 drum tracks in that day.
Yeah.
And then 8 bass tracks in that day. But we got no rhythms done. Then I went back on another day and did all the vocals. And we punched in some bass. And now we did the rhythms. And we built 3 more fucking songs. So I think we're on like 3 or 4 days, which isn't that much money if you think about it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And we're almost on an album.
That's insane.
So you, my friend, are getting charged too much money for a single, in Vex's humble opinion. Unless they're the greatest thing ever. I don't know.
Which, you know, I like to think you get what you pay for, which if I'm going to be putting $800 on anything,
mm-hmm.
in my opinion, that better be the best damn thing I've ever heard in my life.
Who found these guys?
Chris did. It's near his hometown.
Okay.
And these are guys, like, he, I don't want to say idolized, but he loved, like, these guys. They were big influences on him.
That's a lot of money for a song, dude. The producer way back in the day was more than that for one song.
Wow.
In the 90s. And I was like, really? He's like, yeah.
I think for their deal is that they'll help arrange it. They'll help songwriting-wise, which the but songs
you,
are written.
You don't need that.
I don't.
Like, this is where it gets weird. So listen, in my opinion, and this is a podcast, and you can tell me to fuck off, and I'm fine.
Go ahead.
Fuck that. And then do they want fucking publishing on back of
that
single?
I don't know
Do they
about
want
that.
Points? Like, it's a weird thing. It sounds to me like it's a producer and not a recording engineer. So if it's a producer, they're like, no, change this part, move that there. Not that it won't hurt the song,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't fucking need it. Your songs are done.
Yeah.
So, and then they're going to want points against it. So if you sell it on Bandcamp or you get it on iTunes, you got to give them percentage. You got to be careful of that stuff, man. Yeah, it sounds to me like it's a production deal, not a fucking engineer deal.
Well,
did you sign anything?
There was no contract or anything signed into it. Like, we're going to go ahead with it because, you know.
It's a lot of fucking money.
It is, and, you know. Chris put a down payment down himself.
But if you, for that money, you could have got 2 full days in the studio I'm in, which is like a pro studio.
And they had another deal where it was like 3 songs for this match, but it would also include t-shirt, blah, blah, blah. They would make our merch.
My eyes are bugging out of my head. This sounds like a production line. This isn't somebody going to make you a good record, man. In my opinion, it doesn't sound good. You should have consulted the old head before you fucking went ahead, perhaps.
Probably should have, but...
It just doesn't... Like, it sounds like a fucking... They're like going to... Oh, we'll make a t-shirt. Hey, man, we're going to make you fucking bumper sticker. It's going to be awesome.
This is what they're about.
It's a lot of money just
like
to
fucking
check
out. We're not doing the other 2 songs
there
yet, because, like I said... I was skeptic because of the price. And,
yeah.
You know, and the argument is, you know, if you want it badly, you know, you put in the money. I'm like, I agree.
No.
But
in 2018, fuck that. In 2018, we're recording right now on a computer.
Yeah.
I could make you a decent demo on my computer with just what we're looking at right
mm-hmm.
before us. So don't tell me, like, you got to put the money. No.
No, it's not my words.
That's what they said. Here's the thing. In the 90s, the guy who could really run the board and own the board, when you had $10,000 of gear to make a record, it made sense to give somebody $800 for a single. It did because you had $10,000 in gear, but you don't need $10,000 in gear now. There's kids who cannot play a fraction of, well, as you play right now, who play the riff once, put it in iTunes, fucking mix it around on iTunes, whatever they're using, in Pro Tools, and move it around and make a song, and can't even play the fucking song.
Mm-hmm.
And then you fly in a piece here, and you do a plug-in, and you make a fucking vocal, and you fucking distort it. I don't know, man. I don't like this idea. I don't know. Just saying. Not my business. Moving right along. What was your first concert when you were a kid? Was it Nickelback?
It was Nickelback. It was Nickelback, Puddle of Mud, which we mentioned before.
He's sober now.
He is.
He's on the road.
He is.
He's on the road.
A friend
of mine did that tour with them recently.
I knew last year I took brief little lessons from Paul Phillips, who's their original lead guitar player.
What was that like?
It was cool because when I was a kid, it was like – it was one of the first bands I saw. So it was like – I got to tell him. I was like, dude, it was like – you were in that moment.
Yeah, for
me, it was like, I want to do this. So it was surreal. And I learned a lot of stuff about what makes a song good.
Okay.
Or what little things you can add to a song
sure.
to make it good. And that's something I take away.
Yeah,
because, you
yeah,
know,
yeah.
any guy can teach you this scale, this scale, this
mm-hmm.
scale, this scale. But
serve the song.
I want to learn how to serve a song, which I always thought he did. I mean, especially in those times. And I got to learn some cool behind-the-scenes stories, too, which I'm not going to get into detail.
No, of course.
But he mentioned that a lot of what he did was a product of the time, because at the time, guitar solos weren't in.
Yeah.
You know, Deftones were huge.
Yeah.
And so what he did there was, for the verses, he would open it up, and you would do a lot of little minor, like, clean overdubs here and there, like color notes, so to
say. Yeah, of course.
Which I always found that fascinating, and I loved learning that.
But now you'll never forget it, and you'll know that for the rest of your life.
Exactly.
Like, it's cool. That's an interesting. Was it one lesson, or was it like a series?
It was a few, you know.
Where does he live?
He lives in Jacksonville, Florida.
Oh, so it was like the internet.
Yeah, it was over Skype, which
is weird.
So cool. It was interesting. He's actually, he had stopped doing music briefly. He was doing a, he was becoming a body, not bodybuilder. He was,
he, a fitness guru?
Fitness guy. He was a personal trainer.
Oh, okay.
But,
yeah.
And he met some girl. Now he's doing music again.
Okay.
Which he's, you know, he's older now. He said he's not about living in a bus these days.
Because he did it.
Because he did it. I mean, they did it forever too. And he did it for a long time. And he, but he said he's still doing stuff. He's got a book coming out. He's doing an acoustic tour.
That's awesome.
And he's got a band together, but it's apparently in talks. I don't know if I can say this on air.
So that was a random edit on the Vex on Vex podcast, episode number 21. Yeah. Just in case Vince doesn't want to get sued by his previous guitar teacher, who was a member of the band Puddle of Mud.
Yeah.
Moving right along, exactly. Sir. So Puddle of Mud opened up that show you saw for the first time.
Yeah. Well, it was 12 Stones was the first band.
Holy shit, they were good.
Yeah.
I remember that.
That was awesome.
That was awesome.
Puddle of Mud, and then Nickelback, and then Three Doors Down was the final band.
The first time I'm in Europe, we were in some backstage area, and there was a giant Puddle of Mud fucking poster, and I'm looking at this poster, and they were huge at the time.
Yeah.
I'm like, they're in the bus right now, and I'm just in this little fucking shitty fucking room with awful catering. Like, it was awful. Like, it was shit. And we go out, and we played. It was a good stage, and it was a good crowd, but I was like, you had to go in the back, and you went out of the building, and you went to another building, and you took a staircase down.
Yeah.
And that was the green room. And I'm looking at this Puddle of Mud poster, and this is in like 2002. And then in like 2005, we're in LA. I think I told you the story
before. Yeah, you mentioned this.
Where they kicked us out of the studio. We were going to work with the producer guy. He was going to work with us for free to get points on one of our singles.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, man, Puddle of Mud cold. So you guys, and then we had to leave. We're going on tour. We had to leave. So we didn't get in. So Puddle of Mud like followed me for a couple of fucking years there. You know what
I mean? Yeah, I think that was when Paul left the band at the time.
Was there? Yeah.
Yeah, so he wasn't involved with that.
I'm just saying. Not that I'm mad at Puddle of Mud, but they were living the dream, and I was chasing.
You're chasing the dream.
But it's
then,
cool.
I forget what the last show I went to was.
Seriously? You have no idea what the last concert was.
I'm trying to.
I saw Queens of the Stone Age a few months ago.
How was that?
It's fucking great. Royal Blood opened.
Nice.
Two dudes. Lot of fucking music.
All bass and drums,
yeah,
right?
Lot, but distorted. You know what I mean?
Nice.
Really good. Queens were great. They were fucking great. It was a great show. Now I'm going to the same venue. It's like the pier, Penn's Landing Pier. It's out.
Nice.
It's out by the water, and we're gonna see Primus and Mastodon, which I told you off microphone. I'm going Wednesday. So, but see, this is weird. So it's 5/27/2018. We're recording all this. Han Solo movie came out a couple days ago.
Yeah.
And this won't be on the fucking air for months.
Like, yeah.
Remember you did your episode and then Chris was like, oh, this week on the Vex on Vex podcast.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, it's going to be out in like fucking 3 months or something.
Exactly. And then Autobar just happened. We're playing the truck again.
Actually. Is it the balcony or the truck?
I think it's the balcony.
I think it's the balcony scene, too.
But when... We can say this on air, right?
Yeah, yeah. When our record comes out, we're going to have a record release party at the Trocadero Theater, and we're going to have Ascension Drive play with us.
Exactly. So, and that's the big...
we do the big stage.
The big boy stage.
So we're working with that promoter in 2 weeks, actually.
Nice.
I don't know if you're going to be around. It's a Saturday. I don't know what your schedule's going to be. Try to come. We're playing the ECW Arena. Do you know what ECW was?
Where is that?
It's South Philly.
Okay.
It's the same promoter from... I want you there so I can introduce you to him. Because he's the guy who books Main Stage Truck. So if you guys got it, I got to get you in that fucking swing.
What day is that, the 9th?
Yeah,
exactly. That's my girlfriend's birthday, but...
Well, you should bring your girlfriend, goddammit.
Okay.
Ah!
I can try to swing that. I'll try.
She likes rock and roll, right?
She does. Or if not, I will tell one of my guys, be there.
Yeah, give me Chris even. Him. Chris is a smart guy.
I'll give
Chris. But like, just to make the introduction, because the guy who's going to book, who booked that show for us is the guy who does the main stage at Truck.
Okay.
So you got to get on fucking terms with him anyway.
Yeah.
He'll book you, though. He's a good guy. As long as we sell our tickets, you make him money. That's all I give a fuck about.
We've been kind of hyping the show on the low, on the down low, telling people we're going to play the Truck at some point.
Yeah, it's happening. I just got to fucking get the date together and get the record. So we're not – it's weird. It's so expensive to make an album. You know what I mean? Like, we're there. We're getting there. They're going to print the album and it's going to fucking come out. So now maybe fall, because we're already – it's going to be June soon. I don't know. I got to mix it, master it, the whole thing, blah, blah, but it's happening.
All right, and you're on – you do the mixing and mastering too? You're involved with that process?
You know what's weird? I don't want to be, and we were making a record. We're doing tracks of the day. And he was doing the bass thing, and I just started producing. I stopped the track. I said, change the – like, I'm a control freak. And I shouldn't be doing it, but then it did sound better. When the bass was done, it sounded way fuller and better.
Yeah.
So I had that – I don't know. Mixing's tough because have you done mixing yet?
I've I've seen the process, but
because you listen to these things over and over and over, and like we hired a professional who's very good at it, so that's what he does for a living. Like if your roof was leaking, I'm the guy to fix it.
Yeah.
But if you want to mix, this is the guy to mix it. So you got to do that. The mastering is tricky to me. I don't know much about it. It's just it's complicated. It's like they Vince Neil used to describe it. He was the singer of Motley Crue. It brings out like the bells and whistles sonically of your track, mm-hmm. things that you wouldn't normally hear the master pull out. So I'm looking forward to that. I don't know. I don't normally fuck with it. I get good people. I hire it. The recording for me is very important. I want it to go in clean and to sound full and to be where it's at. And then they can mix it. And if I sign off on the mix they made, mm-hmm. then we'll master it. Then you sign off on the master and then it's time to go.
That's interesting.
And then we have a printing company, and like the same guy's trying to, he's like, well, listen, you make the record, you should finish your book, and I'll print them both simultaneously, and you can put it out. And so I'm thinking about that. And then I kind of want to read the book and make an audiobook simultaneously.
That would be funny.
Which would be kind of weird, right, in your own fucking voice. Because Paul Stanley did it from Kiss. Like, he put his book out, and simultaneously you can get like the audio. And it's good to hear him speak it.
I was going to ask if he narrated that.
Are you a Kiss fan at all?
I am.
Go on YouTube and just listen to Paul Stanley's book. The whole thing's there. It's on YouTube. Awesome. It's for free. And it's awesome.
I'll check that out.
You read it, and the inflection's one thing in your head. And then he says it, and you're like, oh, he didn't mean that at all. it's drastically different to hear what his voice is.
It's so funny when you read like autobiographies. Yeah. I read Slash's.
It's a mess, though. Slash's isn't that good. He was still like under the haze of his fucking addiction.
Yeah, there were some – like when he retold the story about was it St. Louis?
Yeah.
We've all seen the St. Louis riot video. Yeah. So the way he described it in the book, I was like, Slash, that's not what – all saw that happen.
And then, I don't know if you know this, but when they were negotiating Guns N' Roses getting back together, Axl was like, so you know you'd said a bunch of shit in the book that didn't happen, right? Yeah. And Slash was like, I know, I'm sorry.
I did not know that.
Because Slash didn't write the book. He spoke it to a writer. I'm writing my fucking book, so it's in my voice. But like, you know, Slash is a rock star. He's not going to sit down in front of his fucking computer and type. I'm getting hungry, by the way, so steaks are coming soon.
Steaks.
Speaking of steaks.
Let's bring this up.
What's your temperature when you eat a steak?
Medium rare.
Me too.
Medium rare.
Like, medium rare is what's up, right? Like, and then when you go to the place, they're like, oh, it's going to have a warm pink center. And you're like, just like my lady. Woo! Boozdy-boozdy-bop, skibbity-bop.
Exactly. I feel like that's such a big thing to talk about.
Why?
With steak, because everyone likes their steak a certain way.
Like, in my experience, most people, like most women I've lived with, most friends I've taken out to get steak, it's always medium rare. Like, I don't know who to fuck around who does
like,
that.
I knew a guy that only liked it medium well. It was my singer.
But that's not bad. Medium well is medium's medium. So it's not burnt.
Or well done. I'm like,
when
why
you do
are you
a
doing
steak
that?
Well
it's like,
done,
it's like,
you
it's
lose
like you're
chewing
leather. But my grandfather,
yes.
Who I was, Big Vince, he liked his well done. But I forget what it said. Usually I would say, you know, I don't know if I could trust someone that likes their steak well done.
No, someone of that age grew up at a time where the refrigeration wasn't as modern as it is. You had to make all meat well done because it was the Great Depression. Things were spoiling. And if you had to make meat, there could be bacteria in it.
Yeah.
Like it was a different world.
I did not know that.
And he got used to eating it from the time of 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 years old. Mm-hmm. That's just how he ate it. Now, my mother also grew up in the Depression. So when she made steak, she burnt the fuck out of it. But I didn't know that you could eat steak any other way. Just like his family probably did the same thing.
Yeah.
So then when I grow up and I go out into the world, I'm like, no. And then it was weird because my mother raised me. And then you leave. I left like 19, 20 years old. I move out. And then before she had passed away, I took her out to eat once. I had a really great Chinese food restaurant at 19th and Chestnut in Center City. Not that you give a shit, but I loved it there. I loved it there. I used to go all the time. And I took my mom there before she passed away. And I used to get chicken and broccoli as one of my things. And I'm just eating the fuck out of this broccoli. And she's like, you eat broccoli? And it turns out I like fresh broccoli. I don't want it squishy. Like, my mom had a big thing. She was, again, a depression person, so their vegetables were frozen,
mm-hmm.
and the meat was fucking burnt. Like, it was a different time, man.
Yeah.
And so I want fresh, crunchy fucking broccoli that can sop up the sauce, and it's good. So she didn't know that. So it blew her mind a little bit. So when you say that your grandfather, Big Vince, liked his food done.
Yeah.
It makes sense to me.
Makes sense.
Thoughts?
That makes sense. I never would judge him. I never met him.
You never met him.
Passed before I was born.
I never knew
born.
That. So why would you know how he likes his fucking steak?
My father would tell me that story. Because I was making fun of people who like their steak well done. And he was like, You know, your grandfather did.
But it was a different time.
And I'm kind of like, oh.
What about your dad? How did your dad tell you?
He always made it medium rare for us.
Yeah.
I asked him, actually, every time he made steak, because I would just enjoy the steak so much. I was like, "What? How do you cook yours?" And he always said medium rare.
So is he a barbecue guy, or would he cook in the stove?
He likes barbecue.
Yeah, I'm a barbecue guy. I can make a badass steak on the barbecue. I really can. I can't cook per se. I can make a badass steak. I make this dish. This is such a fucking tangent. The Vex on Vex podcast goes off in every direction simultaneously. I make pineapple stuffing. And it's banging. You're a little hungry, right?
I love pineapple.
I got some. Dude, when we get off this, I'm going to fucking. Actually, fuck it. I'm going to pause this. You're having some pineapple stuffing, and then we'll discuss it. So yes. Bear with us. For those of you waiting, our friend Vincent has tried my pineapple stuffing. There's some in your mouth as we speak. What are your thoughts?
Oh, my God. This is amazing.
It's good, right?
Yeah.
And, like, I got the fucking recipe from my second wife. I've been married too many times. A friend of mine, this is a joke. At my, he was like, yo, man, I wasn't invited to your last fucking wedding. I'm like, listen. I get married a lot. Just wait it out. And I'm sure you can come to the next wedding. It's not even a fucking problem. Right? Isn't that fucked up? Three weddings in, man. That's a lot of weddings.
That's
so
insane.
Eventually, I'm sure there's going to be a fourth. I mean, I don't know. We'll see. At any rate. You like the pineapple stuffing?
I love it.
So I can make steak really well on the grill. Mm-hmm. I can make pineapple stuffing from scratch, straight up. Like for all major holidays, I make that. Yeah. People fucking love the shit. I stole it from my second wife. It was her recipe. I tweaked it. I made it Vex-ish. Like I added some stuff. I took some stuff out, but it's like my thing now. I can make raw vegetables on the grill, and they're banging. And I use adobo. You know what that is? As a spice.
I've heard of that, yeah.
My second marriage honeymoon was in Puerto Rico. My third wife is from Puerto Rico, ironically enough. But when I was down there, we went on an excursion. Paid a guy like $200 or $300, and a whole group of us went on a boat. We went out to the middle of fucking nowhere. But it was like heaven. It was this little island in Puerto Rico. You just went out. They were drinking. I don't drink. And he would just barbecue like chickens and shit for us, like chicken drumsticks.
Nice.
And you just have lunch for like the $100, whatever you spent. And it was a good day. And he used adobo spice, which my wife at the time, of course, asks him. He's like, it's adobo. So when I come home, I get adobo. And then I meet the third wife after the second one breaks up. And she's like a fucking Puerto Rican chick. She cooks with adobo. So now adobo is in my shit. So if I make you a steak, it's going to have some adobo on it. It's great, man. So I can make a banging steak. I can make good vegetables. I'm really, really, this is so gay because, I don't know if gay is the right word, but homosexual now. I, as a single male in my 20s, I got very adept at making pasta.
Yeah.
And I use sausage. I can use meatballs. Like, I make a good fucking pasta thing. Now, your gravy, as they call it gravy,
yes.
Is it homemade?
Yes.
Who makes it?
My mother did it, and it was her father was Italian.
Of course.
And so is my dad's father was Italian. So she kind of mix both recipes together.
Interesting.
Which is interesting. I actually got to make the sauce.
Does she freeze it?
I don't think so.
Because what happened, I'm sorry to, I know we're asking you a story, but in my first marriage, she was an Italian, and her father would make the gravy, and they'd freeze it. And so I would take home like 6 or 7 jars, and I'd have it in my freezer, so when you're going to have, you could never buy sauce.
Yeah. So but I always notice whenever, because it's a process. Big process. It was a lot of fun, but I always noticed whenever we didn't make the sauce, she would buy Newman's. I asked her, why Newman's? Why Newman's marinara?
What'd she say?
She said she felt it's the closest to the family's recipe.
Interesting.
Closest tasting. So I tell my girlfriend when we go shopping, I was like, where's the Newman's?
Ah.
Because I can, one of the few things I can make well is spaghetti.
Okay.
But, which I always have fun doing that. I always tell her, let me do my magic in here. I like adding new things. Like, I like spicy food.
Interesting.
I always have. So I like...
And a Spanish girlfriend, so that kind of lines up.
She doesn't like spicy food.
Neither does mine.
It's so funny. It's like, I don't know why.
That third wife does not like spicy food.
So
she's fucking Puerto Rican.
When I'm heating the sauce up, I'll add like Tabasco or some stuff into it just to give it that kick.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Tastes good.
I grew up in a weird family where... My mother's side, they're all European Lithuanians, okay?
Mm-hmm.
My father was a mutt, if you will. Also European, but not like fucking Russia area. So Lithuania is, Poland, that whole Baltic nations are called. Not that you know the geography or care. They would sit at the dinner table and they would bring the hottest shit imaginable. And then they would just, the two men or the three men or whoever was eating at the dinner table would have, all right, how many are you going to have? Pepper. And like... I would watch this at like 5 and I'm like, why are we eating hot peppers? And like, why is dad fucking sweating? And what is happening right now? And like, I never ever liked it. But then you get older and you start to appreciate it. You know what I mean?
I like spicy food.
And then there was this weird thing called hot potato chips in the 80s when I was really, really? Little. Where it's a regular potato chip with hot powder on it.
Chili powder?
Yeah, more or less. They were fucking scorching. I don't know if they still sell them. I don't really eat junk food like that anymore. Mm-hmm. I wish I did, actually. I really miss junk food. But I like seeing my dick without a mirror more. You know what I mean? So I had to cut out a lot of the sugars and stuff and things of that nature. But the point is that they were hot potato chips, and I used to sit there and eat them. And then the only thing that would knock out the fucking heat when it got too bad was the milk. Because wow. The milk could coat your throat. You know what I mean?
That's fun.
It's fun. Ah, ha, ha. So we were talking off mic while you were getting your pineapple stuffing,
yeah.
Which you can have more of. Go ahead. No one's going to hurt you. You're going to expand your YouTube channel.
Yes.
So it's going to be beyond just a guitar situation where you're going to actually full-on interview people. Is that correct?
I started a series called Me and My Guitar.
Okay.
Which I interviewed. For now, it's like my friends that are guitar players. I started with my friend Zach from the band Remlia, who play in like Southern Lower Delaware. That kind of like
these. Sure. What about Gunner? Did you get Gunner yet?
I'm not. He's actually one of the first guys I had in mind.
Yeah, definitely. I want to get him on this podcast, to be honest with you, and just pick his brain about Ozzy and shit, because he loves that stuff.
That'll be fun. Then again, with him, too, you also know what you expect. It's like talks.
That's
talks,
a pod. You're supposed to. It's a podcast.
Well, it's him. It's like sometimes when you talk to him, it's like, Sebastian, slow down a little bit.
He's a good guy.
Yeah, he is. I love that kid.
I reached out to him because somebody I know is putting together like a Sabbath tribute band.
Oh, yeah.
You and I had discussed it. That. And then he wasn't interested. He was like, well, I'm more of an Aussie guy. And I was like, well, that's interesting.
It is interesting.
It is. Because like,
I'd love to do a project sometime.
I don't, but that whole Sabbath thing, right? Yeah. As a guitar player, his tips are cut off. So yeah. Do you feel it's limited to play those riffs?
I don't think so, because that, if anything, that attributed their sound too.
No, it did, but like, you're a guitar player. You're a masterful player. So if you have to play Iron Man every night because you're in a fucking tribute band.
That's
like,
a great song, though.
I do love that fucking song.
I'm going to sound like that guy. That might be one of my favorite, if not my favorite Sabbath song. I also like, from the Dio era, the Mob Rules.
You want to hear something great?
Yeah.
So we played last night. Starscream had a show. The opening band was supposed to be a band called the Outlaw Pandas.
Mm-hmm.
Overcoming Gravity, which I'm now kind of working with, who I love dearly. They're a great fucking band. If you don't know who they are, look up Overcoming Gravity on Facebook and all the social media shit. They almost opened up for 30 Seconds to Mars. They were in a contest with 104.5, which is here awesome. In Philly. They're a great fucking band. I don't know if you've heard them yet. You got to hear them. They're fucking awesome.
You said they sound like 30 Seconds to Mars?
Ish. Damn. Ish. Like, it's the best parts. And then they're still rock.
Then I'll dig that.
Good.
I love 30 Seconds to Mars.
He can sing his balls off,
Jared
too.
Leto. Oh, my God.
No, not Jared Leto. Fucking Overcoming Gravity.
Okay. Like,
fucking Phil's great. So listen, they opened. The second band is the Outlaw Pandas, who've been around longer than me, actually. They're really,
really
good guys. Yeah, yeah. And I love the drummer. He's like a mentor to me. His name's Tom. I fucking love Tom. They start playing. They're doing their set. They like call me out. They're like, hey, this is a song from back in the day. You're like, this is Rex. Huh? I'm cool. And then it's time to end, right? They go into fucking Mob Rules by Black Sabbath. And they're like, no, but think about it. No one plays that. And they weren't a cover band. They just threw it into fuck with me. Like, I thought that was awesome. And I hear the drummer, he's like, yeah, man, it's not on the set list. Nobody fucking knew. We just went into it. I was like, yeah.
I love that.
It did sound great, too. Fucking
it's a great song.
I love that shit.
But I am going to do expanding from that. And I want to interview different musicians. And you were actually one of the first guys I was going to ask.
That'd be great.
It.
Yeah.
And then my question is, I was going to save it for this, but why don't we tell it here?
No, fuck that. It's going to, my legal name is Vex.
Yes.
I was not born as Vex. Mm-hmm. So when I'm on Vince's thing, you're going to hear the whole story of how that happened.
Yeah, exactly.
Fucking just, I'm not going to blow my load, sir. That's your story. You're going to get going to get that. So maybe they'll tune in. So listen, we know that people listen to it. We get the numbers are back. So initially when I did podcasting, it's a TV Dad's Wrestling podcast, which mm-hmm. is kind of a tongue-in-cheek, literally it's a joke pod. It's fake. It's like fucking the guy from the Jeffersons fucking the guy from the fucking Brady Bunch, like, for real, like, it's really that's exactly awesome. What it is to me. It's funny as fuck, and we act like it's serious, and there's like crowd noises and we got bells. It's
hilarious.
And shit. Have you ever heard it?
I need to listen to that.
You do
now.
it's funny. So anyway, that got like 5,000 listeners a week by itself on the Podbean app, which is an allowed to load a network, which blew my mind. And I was like, I'm going to try this Vex on Vex thing, because I felt My hands were tied. I was limited. I couldn't discuss rock and roll. I mean, we did, because Johnny Zero is a really good musician. So we would deviate sometimes, and we would talk about it. But the reality of it is, it was a fuck. We're in character. We're playing these TV dads wrestling announcers and shit. So yeah, that's what we're doing. So the Vex and Vex podcast started out just to be able to talk shit. We have 10,000 listeners a week now. Like, think about that. And the guy who runs the station, which is Starscream's manager, his name is Michael Belinsky, is trying to get it to like 100,000 a week if he can. He's trying to build it up. Could you imagine? That'd so this like, oh, I just broke my microphone. Did you hear that awful? Yeah, no. Sorry, everybody in podcast land. But so it's growing. And now we have, for the first time ever, ads on the show, which to me is awesome.
Yeah.
I want to get someone to sponsor us for real and get ad copy and be like, oh, buy this, blah, blah, blah. Like, so we're trying to do that. So the thing's growing. So my point being, if they listen to this, maybe some of the traffic can go over to your channel.
That'd be awesome.
And we can tell how the Vex got his name story, if that makes any sense. And there's more to it, and we can complicate it and yada, yada, yada. Hmm. Anyway, how are you?
Excellent. I'm hungry.
Yeah, well, you just had pineapple stuffing. You're not that fucking hungry. So when we're finished this episode, we're going to go out to the Texas Roadhouse, which, yo, I am not a fan of country music, and they play it a lot there, but you just deal with it because the steak is fucking awesome. I don't know.
What you don't like country.
No. Do you?
I like some country. I was down in Nashville.
I've been to Nashville.
Nashville. I enjoyed.
Did you see the Gibson store?
I wanted to.
So what the fuck? You weren't in Nashville?
It was closed.
Did you see it?
I did see it, though. We went right up to it.
Fucking the window and shit?
Yeah.
I had no money because we were young when we were there, and I bought a Gibson guitar strap in the Gibson store. You know, that's all I got. But I got one. I fucking did it. You know what I mean?
Like when I went to PRS, they had their entire gift shop. Every time I was there, I was just buying PRS stuff left and right, left and right. I bought my PRS hat, my book, my shirt.
But you almost had a full-time job there.
Almost did. Well, story's not over. It ain't over till it's over.
Exactly. So you'll get there eventually.
I hope so.
Hopefully you're sponsored and you don't have to fucking deal with that situation. These are awesome. Are they your favorite guitars at this point?
They are. Those are my two favorites.
Now, what kind of Gibson do you have? You said you have a Les Paul.
Epiphone,
right?
Les Paul.
Oh, it's an Epiphone. But they're owned by Gibson.
They are owned by Gibson.
So it's the same thing.
I love that guitar.
So it's a standard.
It's an Epiphone standard.
What color?
Sunburst.
Oh, yeah.
It's a very – you saw that.
I don't remember. I'm trying to – I mean, I know your PRSs because they're badass.
When I played with that one band.
Yes, I fucking remember. I remember.
It's beat up.
I remember.
It's – but that's why the PRS also appealed to me, because I also had a Fender – I still have a Fender Stratocaster too.
Interesting.
And
– you know, King Sam adores his Strats. He has a lot of them. Like, he has a collection actually of Strats.
But he's a Gibson guy.
On stage.
Yeah.
You know what he's been playing recently? Is Hagstroms.
Really?
He loves them. You ever play a Hagstrom?
I've not played a Hagstrom.
He got a high-end Hagstrom Les Paul recently. Here's the thing. When I met King Sam, he had a Hagstrom Les Paul when he was like 15 years old that his parents got him. Beautiful guitar. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the binding was getting a little fucked up. Like, we played it too much. So then we get into Gibsons as we get older. Like, our first Gold Top was a Crown. It was like a knockoff guitar. I love that guitar, though.
But I had my Les Paul, my Strat, which were my two main guitars.
Yeah.
And then...
Now they're combined into one called a PRS.
Yeah, because I actually read PRS wanted to bridge the gap.
Everybody knew that. How you read?
I didn't know the history of it until I started reading the book I bought.
So Santana's the first famous guy, right? Well,
Ted Nugent was the first guy on stage.
But Ted Nugent's the one that brought it to us. Mm-hmm. Like, when you think of Santana, you think of the PRS.
Yes.
But man, fucking... Like you said it, Nugent was in that band.
Damn Yankees.
Yes.
Tommy Shaw and Jack Blades.
And he had the fucking Zebra fucking PRS. And that was a long time ago. And he's got this great fucking solo in the video.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what the fuck is that guitar? Because he's a Gibson guy for a long time.
Beautiful guitar.
Yeah.
They are. And the thing about PRS is when you pick them up, it's just like, they feel so great.
I used to own two.
You told me that.
Yeah.
And custom 24s, I think.
Yeah. We had what's the one with the birds?
They all have birds.
No, because I had a burst, an orange burst that just had dots.
Okay.
Which was like $1,000 guitar. And then the birds one was like $3,000.
Yeah, the birds are like their trademark.
Yeah.
I believe.
But I had an introductory.
Okay.
And so we got that PRS first for the rhythm guitar player that was in the band, and he really liked it. So I was like, fuck it, we'll get another one. And then we got another one, the monster, it's beautiful blue one, and he dropped it. Like, he put his strap on wrong, and nothing happened, like a little ding. But the point is, when he left the band, I swapped it in, and I think that is where I took it back to Sam Ash, and I got the Firebird, is that what it's called, the Gibson Firebird?
Yeah.
Yeah, not a Thunderbird. The Thunderbird's the base. I have the Thunderbird too. But I got a white Gibson Firebird, and then I stacked the fucking pickups because it's not humbuckers, they're single coils. Mm-hmm. But now I have a fucking fat, meaty, fucking crazy stacked pickup nice. On it. It's fucking screams. Beautiful. It's a white guitar. The inside of the case is white. It's like a beautiful fucking piece. Nice. But I never had a Firebird before. And I don't know, the PRS, King Sam played it on stage one time. Mm-hmm. We played the balcony at the Troc for a festival, and he played it when he didn't like it, and we got rid of it.
Wow.
Wasn't his thing.
It's just, for me, like I said, I feel like it just appeals to me. And I told you off mic, the most expensive guitar in my collection is an Ibanez Joe Satriani JS series.
Yeah.
With the Floyd Rose and everything.
Yeah.
Easily costs over like $1,000 or so.
That's not that much money, though.
To me, for a guy like me.
My God. With the stuff we're looking at in the office?
Yeah.
Come on, man. No, your PRS is way more than $1,000. The one you got as a gift?
That's the SE series. This is a Korean-made.
No, models. It's not. I didn't know that.
Yeah, they're both. See, the Korean-made models.
Yeah,
they're built in their factories, Korea. They're shipped back to the factory.
Okay.
Into which the PRS specialists at the factory examine the final guitar.
Neither one of my PRSs were SEs. I had real PRSs. I had an introductory one with the dots, and then I had the monster one with the birds. It was a fucking beautiful guitar. I it's weird. I tried to hoard every piece of gear we ever had, but then it didn't make sense. Like I used to have. Two black Marshall full stacks. Now I have a white Marshall full stack and I have a black Marshall full stack because I love Randy.
Yeah, you mentioned
and
that.
it was an 81 and the head didn't sound so good. So I got rid of the head, but I kept the cabs. I had these white fucking Marshall stacks, which is just or a stack.
Yeah.
All right, that's a whole hour. And we talked about fucking all kinds of shit.
We did.
So we're gonna go have a steak dinner. This is the Vex on Vex podcast. It's been episode number 21 with Vince. It was awesome.
Yes.
From Ascension Drive. We are available on the Podbean application on your phone, which is followed by the, or I'm sorry, which is supported by the Loud and Loaded Network. We have a Facebook page we'd ask you to please patronize. And Vince, anything else?
Check out Ascension Drive on Facebook, Bandcamp, YouTube, wherever have you.
And Vince also has a channel.
Yes. And check out my YouTube channel, Vincent Gracie, on YouTube.
There you go.
And
go ahead.
Stay frosty.